Hi, this is John Amos. I want to welcome you to the next podcast in the series of podcasts presented for you by the Psychologist Association of Alberta. The purpose of the podcast is to present information that is timely, topical, and even controversial to the membership. Courtney Barnett, I think is her name. I think she's an Australian singer who got a lot of attention a few years ago, but has kind of drifted off now, but I thought maybe we should play some of her stuff. So today I want to deal with an article that was out in the British Psychological Societies on their website and in their journal, so to speak, on 10, I want to be careful, I think it's 10 suppositions that we have in psychology based on, you know, experiments and research that haven't been replicated. That is that there are things that many of us talk about and have and would believe, but they haven't been replicated, so we ought to be perhaps a bit more hesitant and tentative in bringing them to our professional lives. Okay, again, this is the Research Digest part of their website, and I'll read the title again, 10 Famous Psychological Findings That It's Been Difficult to Replicate. So we'll go through them, you know, pretty quick. The first one they talk about is the research done by Cuddy. Dana Cuddy was at Harvard, and she published research on the power posing, and she actually... Now, I may be perpetrating a myth, and you might want to look into this a little bit more. I did at one point, but can't quite remember if I'm presenting this in the correct way, that she didn't get tenure at Harvard, even though this research that she published in 2010 had been cited over 450 times by other researchers, but it has failed to be replicated. Attempt to replicate the effects of power posing on risk-taking behavior with 200 participants compared to sample of 42 participants in her research, and they were unable to replicate it. There are 33 published studies that shows the existing evidence is too weak to justify a search, further investigation or search for the moderators that determine this. What Cuddy did was said, stand a certain way, hold your body in a certain way, and then she would expose her subjects to risk-taking. And people who were so empowered by this pose would take greater risks, but it hasn't been shown to be replicated. The other one that many of us as clinicians talk about is this idea of the pencil in the mouth experiment, where if you bite it between your teeth versus hold it with your lips pursed, they're saying it increases positive affect. In other words, facial expression, it affects affect. Now, some of us still work with this in the idea of changing facial expression and modifying the angle of the head, building in a nod, twinkling the eyes, all of this stuff will evoke an affective response that is in contrast to the negative affect response that we're working with in the patient. So a lot of us still use this, but this idea of holding the pencil pursed lips versus with your teeth and forcing a smile, they have... not been able to replicate this in 17 independent labs and 2,000 participants found no effect of mouth positioning specifically on the ratingness of the funniness of cartoons. What they did, they show them cartoons and they have them rate them how funny they are. And people are holding their pencil one way, lower, the other way, higher. They haven't been able to do that. Now, another experiment that I've talked about before, and I've talked about this over the years, is Baumeister's work. Baumeister has worked on this idea of self-control, and that self-control he sees as a limited resource. That is, in his experiments, when he's asked people to engage in a lot of self-control, he finds that their ability to sustain effort diminishes over time, and he has hypothesized that that then self-control is a limited resource. And replication efforts in 23 labs involving 2,000 participants, looking at his sequential task procedure, the one that has been used, to demonstrate this capacity for self-control, they've been unable to replicate it. Their findings added to the outcome of a recent meta-analysis, 68 relative published and 48 unpublished studies had found little support for the idea of willpower as a limited resource. Baumeister's initial response to a lot of this was, yeah, he was very, very humble and very direct. He said, yeah, have I wasted, this whole career in trying to determine this and thinking that I have and maybe fooling myself. But he says that maybe there are additional procedures that can be employed that would show this. Another one is on exposure to words pertaining to aging will make you walk more slowly. This fascinating research in this, and in 1996, this classic social priming, part of the social priming literature, social priming brings to question how much social priming really is there. We are aware that cues and signals sent around something, will affect the behavior and affect the actions of the individuals that are exposed to the priming. I did a couple of podcasts on this. One was negative responsive reaction to facial expressions, where the setup in one instance is very neutral and the other is an expectation that the expressions will be evoking negative emotion. The other is regarding my critique, not mine, but my review of the critiques of Zimbardo's research, where they alleged that a lot of social priming took place prior to that contaminated the neutrality quote that Zimbardo would have wanted people to feel about the experiment. So discussing aging doesn't cause people to walk slower, apparently, and that then points at this whole idea of how much social priming can influence. In another study, go through all 10 of these because some of them are kind of boring, and especially the one on the retrospective effect of revisiting a test and all of a sudden the test you just took gets better. I'm not quite sure how it works, but this is Beam, and I've already criticized his work in effect, right? Biology and this idea that he's found a psi effect that will increase the performance on a test you already took when you revisit the test after you've taken it. Go on to some other stuff. There was research that was done, and we as psychologists believe that babies are born with an innate biological predisposition to imitate, in other words, to watch, follow, and imitate. However, earlier this year, and this is from the article, a methodically rigorous investigation found no evidence to support that newborns do imitate, that there is a cultural element to it where they have to learn to imitate and figure that one out. Figure that out as a behavior. In another one, we've got the cuddle hormone, oxytocin, and there's this idea that oxytocin exposure will make you more trusting. In other words, the exposure would be they shoot a little oxytocin in your nose, and in the journal Nature, they published this article. It's been cited 2,500 times that after taking this nasally, participants were more willing to give money to a stranger in a financial game. There's a lot of hype then on oxytocin. They call it this amazing bonding miracle molecule that can increase world peace. They say that if you're exposed to this makes you a nicer person. But anyway, this hasn't been shown to be true. The positive effects of oxytocin have been difficult to replicate in 2015. They wanted to replicate these, and they failed to reproduce this effect that was first noted and published in Nature. They say that oxytocin is also associated with affiliation. So a group of Trump people yelling lock them up or whatever it is would also probably be releasing oxytocin and enjoying that. In some of the behavioral economics research that has been cited, they talked about people who being reminded of money tended to become more pernicious and more selfish. I'll read this. They were shown a faint image of a $100 bill, and then they were exposed to the money. People who were exposed to the money imagery in this experiment showed stronger endorsement of the current political system, less sympathy for victims or socially disadvantaged people. So that money, which is associated with benefit or loss, increases vigilance or increases this caution. 36 international psych labs attempted to replicate the effect of this money reminder, and only one reported a significant effect. What they believe is that, is that perhaps the sampling, the students that were part of the initial sampling and showed this response, were coming from the University of Chicago, which they feel is a notoriously more conservative. The economics department of the University of Chicago is famous for its conservative positions relative to macroeconomics. And so maybe that was the basis for these particular subjects showing this more pernicious, restrictive, and less generous response after seeing money in the background, as opposed to the control group, which didn't see this faint $100 bill that was on a screen that they were looking at. In a research on honesty, took two groups. There was a box, and you put money in. You go to the coffee room, you get your coffee, you're supposed to pay for it, right? And they had a box, they called it the honesty box. And in one cohort, they put a picture of staring eyes on the wall, a face or eyes, I'm not quite sure what the stimulus was. Another, they had flowers. And what they found was there was a significant increase in honesty when there was a poster of the staring eyes, meaning that sense that we've got eyes on you increases the propensity to be more honest and pay for your coffee. However, these findings were difficult to replicate. A test in Germany and then using a larger sample found that no evidence for the Big Brother eyes increased pro-social behavior existed. They've done some meta-analysis from over 50 studies and tens of thousands of participants. There was no evidence that watching eyes do, in fact, burst generosity. Now, these are all these nudges. Behavioral economics has been about how do you affect people's behavior in very, very subtle ways. Amazing literature on this, just unusual things where they'll say, have people look at the last three numbers of their social insurance number and then have them, one group doesn't do it, one group does, and they're bidding on something. And after looking at the numbers, people with higher numbers bid higher, those kinds of things. So all of these things have been fascinating to us as subtle nudges regarding behavior. But again, as with this one, often with a greater scrutiny, they don't pan out. They're delightful for us to talk about, though, because it does seem that in very subtle ways with public policy, we can affect a lot more than. And I've always said that psychologists are suckers for any idea that seems to be evidence-based that we can jump into and increase our potency either at the, you know, macro level or micro level clinical practice or in the larger world around us. I want to thank you guys for tuning in. Well, I'll let this guy do it.
Thank you for listening again, or for the first time, or for the last time, we share this moment, and I am grateful for this. I was born to rage for my father's pain, with my brother's style, for my mother.
Radio. Her perspective was produced by YR Media. You can share your thoughts and her commentary online at kqed.org/perspectives, and that's also where